Welcome back to the Business Systems Summit. And in this session, we're going to be chatting with Kim Orlewski. She's LinkedIn's top sales influencer to follow in 2019. Success Magazine awarded her the most inspirational blogger of 2015. And she was the Female Entrepreneur of the Year in 2017 by Startup Canada. Her sales career started with Xerox Canada, where she ended up winning multiple awards and worked her way up through corporate sales before she finally decided, I need to step out and do my own thing. And she decided to build her own company. And today she teaches other business owners how to sell more effectively using a lot of those strategies and techniques that she learned over the years. She's built out training and coaching programs. And at the moment, she's working on her third book, which is actually dedicated to her sales philosophy, which is called Sell More Faster. So it's definitely one to watch out for. So it's with great pleasure that I get to introduce Kim Orlewski to the call.
Thank you so much, David. I'm so excited to be here. You're bang on. I actually started my own sales training company specifically so I can afford flights to Sydney. So.
Oh, fantastic. We're now a business expense to travel to Australia. Yeah.
Well, I've never been to Melbourne, but I know Sydney. Yes. So.
Well, I am a little bit biased. Melbourne is better than Sydney. Yeah,
so. I've heard. Yeah.
So I know we've got tons to dive into. So we can dive straight into the session. You're going to walk us through your process that you call the premium solution sales process for getting premium price. And that obviously touches on a couple of things. First, you're selling a premium solution. And secondly, you're getting paid accordingly. So I thought maybe as a way to start, if you can just start off by having you take us through the problem or the challenge that this particular system aims to solve for the business owner. And then we can just go through step by step. How do you complete that?
Yeah. And I think for a lot of business owners, they're number one, when they start their business, they're super passionate about what they do. They love to work with, whether that is, engineering, tech firms, like they want to work with their clients, or they're very technically skilled in what they do. And when they go ahead and they get started, starting their own business, they don't think about how it is to communicate the value that they're ultimately providing somebody. And by positioning ourselves as that premium service, whether you see yourself as top or mid to top, the idea behind this is that, we're ultimately going after that handful of clients that will help us build our business, not necessarily going after hundreds or thousands of clients and then becoming a churn of clientele and business conversations all the way through. And so when we're offering that premium level service, when we think about any type of company that we engage with at a premium level, I mean, this is about creating luxury. This is about creating experience for people. This is about connecting all the way through. And so the pillar, no matter what it is that you're trying to sell, should be, I really care about my clients. I want to help see them achieve and grow and build their businesses, not just provide a service and be one and done and out of there.
Yeah. I think it's quite common when someone gets started, in particular business owners, they seem to be strong in a particular area. Sometimes it is sales, but that's usually rare. Like you said at the start, it's more on the tools and the delivery of the product and service. So it ends up being this hole that they don't really know how to solve properly unless they bring in some other salesperson. But then usually they also don't know how to coach that person. So then they don't know, have I even got the right salesperson doing this?
Well, and I mean, Michael Gerber talked all about this in the E-Myth, right? The difference between the technician and, the other. And the idea behind this is, I mean, it doesn't matter if you are in a position where you're fortunate enough to hire a salesperson. As the owner of the company, at the end of the day, you are 100% accountable to make sure the revenue comes through. Because if you're not bringing in the revenue, even though you might have a salesperson who's ultimately responsible for bringing in the revenue, if you don't make the revenue, you're not going to point the finger at the employee and be like, listen, you can't make your own payroll. Right? I mean, the fingers only get pointed at yourself. And when I worked, you said I worked, for Xerox, and I did, but another company I also worked for was American Express. And American Express built a culture that everyone was a salesperson. And from the top down, if you were the vice president of the organization, I mean, you still had your clients that you had to manage, those relationships that you had to hold on to. The idea is, as you grow your business, you should be responsible for pushing the envelope and getting those higher value clients, those bigger conversations, so that your salespeople can ultimately run the process for the ones that are going to keep the lights on and the doors open.
So the process that you're sharing then is that playbook or that sales process that's like a culmination of all of the things you've learned working at all of these
Yeah. I like to say that we focus on from handshake to handshake, right? I mean, how do you start that initial handshake all the way to closing the deal for that handshake? So, I mean, this starts off right from the very beginning. Like, who's that ideal client? Because too often we sit there and we spend a lot of time, money, energy on creating great marketing systems. But when we have somebody that comes to our door and we don't have the ability to invite them in, right? Or we don't know how to show them an exclusive dinner party different than, you know, a kegger, right? Like, hey, like we're all college students, let's have a good time. You know, I mean, this about, you know, finding that ideal client, finding those right rooms, really articulating, you know, here's the values that we want to share, because sales is different than it was before in that our buyers are more educated, and we want to make sure that when they find us, we can go back to them and say, yes, you are somebody that I would hand select. You are the person that I want. And if it's inbound or outbound where we ultimately are going out there, we know where to find those people and how to start those relationships. And then the process continues on all the way through to how do we create that? How do we create greater value? How do we include the process of emotional intelligence and empathy, which is becoming even more prevalent as automation is taking over, ultimately to get to that point where we are closing those premium level services through proposal methods, getting to referrals and testimonials and turning that sales cycle really, really fast, like a flywheel, right? It just rotates as fast as it can.
So if we start off then, so would step one be then identifying the right target audience?
Yeah. So I mean, even going more fundamental than that, like figuring out what are your numbers, right? Like how many clients do we even need to talk to? Number one, first and foremost, which is oftentimes something that people don't talk about, right? It's, well, I want to achieve, you know, $500,000 this year. I want to achieve $5 million this year. Great. What's your average client worth? How many conversations do you have to have? Is that realistic? And if it's not, then you have to make adjustments. Knowing your numbers, and then from there on, okay, now who of my client base or what are those ideal clients that are going to be able to invest in that, right? What does that ideal buyer look like? And not just what do they look like from a marketing standpoint, where are they hanging out? What are some of the pain points they have? And I put pain points in quotes here because I don't believe that anyone nowadays has any pain. We have Dr. Google and WebMD that has relieved everybody of pain, but rather, you know, the chasm that is created between where we want to be and where we are. So we have the understanding the ideal buyer, right? And what are their fears, uncertainties, challenges, goals, and aspirations? And that's really the key in the sales conversation.
So that first step, and I'm going to get quite particular about calling out the steps as we go. That first one then is around understanding the numbers. And that's kind of starts off with, like, there are probably some sub points underneath that around the goal setting and then backwards engineering.
Simply sales funnel, right? Reverse engineering your sales funnel. What is your goal, right? You know, if you can't articulate it, and the goals will always happen, but you have to know the tasks that need to be done in order to achieve those goals. So how many prospects you need to connect with, how many meetings you have to have every single week, how many proposals you have to have out there. And because if you don't manage those tasks, it doesn't matter how lofty your goals are, they will never happen.
So that first step to get crystal clear, and then we move into, let's say, step number two, which is then around identifying the ideal target.
Who's that buyer, right? What are they concerned with? What are the reasons why they would want to change? Because here's the thing is that if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? And everything is working out for me. And if I do have an issue, I can go to Google and type in my question and find the answer, boom. Or I decide that the answer that has come up is probably too complicated or too intensive. And so all of a sudden it's not actually a problem. It's like, okay, well, that's too much. But there's other things, because ideally we all want to achieve more. We want to be more profitable. We want to have a bigger impact. We want to become more profitable. So whatever that goal that your client is, how do you articulate that? And who is your customer's customer, right? Because if you're going to be out there as a buyer, or sorry, as a seller, you want to be able to help your buyer achieve more for their buyers.
Yeah. So when you're thinking about identifying the target audience, are there particular handful of criteria or something that you think about? You kind of touched on a few things there around, you know, who they are and what is the specific problem that they have that they're looking to solve, and, you know, who are their customers, to see if there's other ways that we can serve them. The person's probably going to have a little bit of an understanding of their target audience and the products and services that they're selling. So that helps to uncover. Are we talking about in this step actually creating an avatar or something like that, where it's...
Yes. So yes. And then getting so clear on that you actually list out the hot 100 list, yes, essentially, right? Because in sales, we should be going through an outbound strategy, right? I mean, we can't rely entirely everything going inbound. Who are those 100 ideal clients that you want to start a relationship? That you would say, if one of those clients, one of those people, companies, whatever, became my client, I would be absolutely honored. Like, I want to make that happen. And so we want to list them out, because as we go through the approaches of, you know, connecting and social selling and other types of prospecting methods, we're becoming much more laser focused and targeted on, I want David and his team to take notice of this. So I need to make sure that anything I put out there, it'd be something that David would more than likely find interesting.
Perfect. So really that step number two gets down to the point of actually having the list of the target prospects.
Yeah. I mean, how do you achieve, going back to the goals, how do you achieve that if you don't know what you're wanting to go after, right? And if, I mean, you're going to have, naturally, you're going to have people coming into you. But the idea behind the sales conversation is, how do you choose, how do you hand select those clients and then start those conversations outward?
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. And then we kind of move into step number three, which I'm assuming now this is, we need some sort of way to get in front of that audience.
Yeah. So we focus on the value proposition and that elevator pitch. And we were inspired with this process by Daniel Pink's To Sell as Human book, right, which is an excellent read. And he talks about how the old elevator pitch is dead. Our model really focuses around, throughout the sales process, asking better questions. So now this is really where we start to introduce that question, because your elevator pitch, the intention of connecting with somebody is to create a conversation. And we don't create conversations by giving you everything that we do. Like, listen, I offer sales training process. David, do you mean some now or in the future? You're like, I mean, but rather asking it in the form of a question, right? You know, when in your business would make sense for you to invest in sales process? Or, you know, when did you have a client that took that last proposal and said, thank you very much, I'll contact you when I'm ready, right? And so those are the conversation starters that we ultimately want to create, where it's based around a question so that we're getting a conversation going.
Yeah. And the idea with this step is to have those down ready, so when the time comes and we do get in front of that prospect off the Dream 100 list or the Hot 100 list, that you're ready to go. You've got an idea of what you're going to be talking about and asking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whether it happens through luck and circumstances, you happen to be at a trade show or a networking event, or you're using it as an opening into a conversation that you may start through LinkedIn or social media, or perhaps you actually go, which is step number four, place the phone call or the email. I want to have a relationship with you, David. This has to start somewhere, right? If I want to date you, I have to get over the awkwardness of stepping up to you at the bar and asking you for your number, right? There has to be that awkward, this is the reality, right? But we have to take that initial step. So what are you going to say in that initial step?
And if we use the step number three to get clear on what we're going to say, and then if step number four is actually then making that contact, and you mentioned a couple of different ways, do you have some preferred methods, or is it hit them in, you know, as many different places as we can and have a certain number of contact points? How do you approach that?
I mean, you know, and we don't touch too much on that. I mean, there's a lot of information on things like social selling and contact marketing, but the idea is, once you have your ideal list of 100, I mean, number one, connect with them on LinkedIn, right? Yes, you know, start just connect with them, and you don't have to put out some really pretty nice little thing. Just, I mean, if you have a robust enough profile, right, and you say connect, chances are they're going to connect with you. They're like, okay, this person's legit. But you know, I mean, the idea is that you're going to start to put out the right content that's going to engage with them, or maybe you even want to tag them in a post and get their opinion on something, or you connect with them in some way. But the idea is that, I mean, at some point, right, we're going to have to get that online conversation offline. Because if we stay in this online realm, I mean, the reality is nobody bought a $10,000, $25,000 product based on email campaign, right? You had to get it offline as quickly as possible. So the idea behind this is, you know, I mean, there's no magic number, because I've had people will reach out to me on LinkedIn and be like, listen, I saw you on LinkedIn Live. I really love that conversation. I would love to talk to you specifically about this. Yep, great. Here's my meeting link, right? Boom, done. Yeah. And I have other people that will like be messaging me like for literally months. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't know if this person is a stalker, or like there's like an intention behind their game. So yeah, I mean, you know, be open and honest and transparent, right? Not that you're trying to sell them, but that, listen, I genuinely believe that, you know, at some point we could help each other, right? I would just love to learn more about you. Right? When can we talk? And if the person's like, I don't really understand, this is why you're having your elevator pitch is so appropriate. It's not what you say, but how you ask. How do you engage the person? Because if you're genuinely interested in learning more about them, they're genuinely interested in telling you more about themselves.
I know salespeople and even like business owners in particular who are incredibly busy with lots of different things going. Sometimes it's hard to know how much to divide their time up or day up into thinking about, you know, prospecting versus, you know, cold outreach versus interacting with people that you're already engaged in versus, you know, the other end as we get further down the pipe. Do you have any ideas on how much sort of, and it's going to vary, so it might be a bit of a how long is a piece of string, but percentage-wise, I'm wondering how much time gets spent in this cold outreach prospecting mode, because I think a lot of people underdo the amount of time that they're connecting, and they wonder why the pipeline is empty. Well, you're not making any new connections.
I think it has less to do with the amount of time and the number of connections that you're ultimately making, right? And this brings us back to that step one, which is, you know, we're not just talking about how the number of prospects that we're ultimately reaching out to, but your prospecting should ultimately lead to meetings. Yes. And if you don't have enough meetings in the pipeline, so for instance, right, sales 101 says that for every sale you need 10 prospects. Right. But the number of meetings that you ultimately need, right? And these are guidelines, right? I mean, use it as a, you know, as a starting point and then adjust it as accordingly, but at least it gives you a starting number to work with. But you need 10 prospects for every sale. You need 4 meetings for every sale. You need 2 proposals for every sale. Now, you're not going to necessarily get to 2 proposals, but that's the dream, right? Because if you have twice as many proposals out there as you're going to get sales, you're going to hit your numbers. Right. Yes. If you have at least, you know, 4 times as many meetings as you have the number of sales, you're likely going to hit your numbers. And if you're not hitting your numbers, right, then take a look at what is falling apart. Right. So if I'm calling on 10 people and I'm not turning 10 conversations into 4 meetings, that means there's something wrong with that conversation. If I'm turning 4 meetings, if I can't drive 4 meetings eventually into 2 proposals, that means that there's something wrong with the quality of those meetings. And if I can't take 2 proposals and eventually turn them into 1 sales, there is something wrong there, right? So where is that sticking point all the way through? But as long as you manage your meetings, ultimately, how many meetings am I having every single week? How many proposals am I putting out there every single week? You will hit your number. And so it's less about the time and more about how that time is being reflected in the result that you're ultimately wanting to achieve.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to go back to the KPIs and being efficient with that. Yeah. So then we've made, let's say, that first contact. And then now you said ultimately we want to get the sales conversation offline. Is that where we kind of bridge to that next step? Is it that phone call or?
Phone call, emails, text messaging. I mean, but the idea is to get to a one-to-one conversation.
Yeah.
And the goal of that one-to-one conversation is to get the meeting. Right. And whether that is a booked phone meeting, a Zoom meeting face to face, or like an in-person meeting, if it's not in somebody's calendar, it doesn't exist. Right. Yes. It's not important. If they have said, listen, I am willing to give you an hour of my time, because all else being equal, I could do something with an hour of my time. right? I mean, the opportunity cost of that hour, it could be I would be out there spending on my own business development or making another process more efficient. But what I've said is that out of all the things that I could be doing with my time, I have decided that I'm going to give David that hour, right? That means I find already that valuable. So we want to create that conversation and get that meeting offline. So that's going to be phone calls. That's going to be those email. And here's the reality is that too many people start with the email transaction, right? Email should be your last transaction, right? Because I mean, the reality is that the number of people that are getting 20, 50, 250 emails every single day and like literally opening them and responding to them, thank you so much for your request. I'm not really interested. It's not real, right? So why do we think that our buyers are somehow different than us, right? Whereas when we get a phone call, right, as long as you're intentional in your phone call, not that we're there to display, but we're rather like, listen, we've been connected on LinkedIn. Listen, I read an article that you had posted. Listen, I'm going to be attending this conference. I wanted to know if you were going to be there. I'm hosting a lunch and learn, whatever it is, right? There's so many reasons we can connect with somebody. Just find one and be willing to go back again and again. If I could turn every single phone call into an immediate meeting, oh my goodness, I would be a billionaire by now, right? But the reality is it doesn't work that way, right? We have to be willing to go, because you've created your hot 100 list, these are the people I would be honored to be doing business with. You have to be willing to try and try again. I would never be married to my husband if the first time he asked me out, he actually accepted the no that I told him, right? He asked me out four times before I finally said yes. And now here we are, like, you know, eventually married. So, I mean, he's the ultimate closer when you get down to it. But the idea is that you want to be, because we're starting with a relationship first, right? Focus on that relationship. Be willing to go back with the reasons and the seasons, right? Every season you connect with the person again, you connect with them again. After four or five times, if they don't give you the meeting, then decide whether they're worth keeping you on the hot 100 list or if you decide to push them off, right? Thanks so much. You know, let's just put somebody else in there.
So if we, just to spell out those steps, if we say then that initial contact, would you include the follow-up component to get them into the one-on-one as part of that? This is just when we document it. Do you have it as a separate step or included in that step?
They are prospect suspect until they've actually moved forward, right? So until you get the meeting, your intention at that point is to get the meeting. And until you get the meeting, they will stay in that spot.
Yeah. And then we move them into, let's say, the one-on-one. Let's say that now with that, is that, you know, depending on how you connect with them, Zoom or phone or whatever, that meeting. And then, we kind of move into that step. Is that a scripted type thing or a process then that you're moving them through? Or
it is. So I like to call that step the lead qualification step. All right. Yep. And the lead qualification step is now that they have accepted that first date, essentially, right? Yes, I agree to go on that date with you. This is not where we tell them all about ourselves, but rather sit back and ask ourselves, is this the right client that I want to work with? Is this somebody that I would eventually want to marry? And through the lead qualification step, this is where we ask a lot of questions. And I stole from IBM, right? IBM created the acronym BANT. And I won't get into why BANT works or why it does. I love it. I love it. And it's easy. So I'm going to continue to use it. But BANT is budget, authority, need, and timeline is the acronym. And so essentially what we want to know is how much, what's the financial component of the conversation, right? Who else is going to be a part of this conversation? Where does the client want to be? Where are they currently? And then the timeline is not just when do they want to make a decision, but why is that date so important to them? What is the impact going to be on their business if this doesn't come forward? And if we can't clarify any one of those or any one of those is gray, they stay in lead qualification phase, because you cannot move a sales cycle forward if you don't know how much money that they're willing to invest or how much an investment would impact their business financially. We cannot help move them forward if we can't articulate where they are and how it will impact their business and where they want to be, right? If a client's like, well, we're just happy being where we are. Well, why would they even invest with you, right? If they're happy where they are and you're there to help them achieve more or become better, right? They're already happy. There's no need for that. Who else is a part of this decision-making? I mean, here's the reality is in business-to-business transactions, there's more than one person who's ultimately going to be a part of this decision-maker. There might only be one decision-maker, right? But every decision maker has an influencer. Every decision maker will typically want to have conversations with other people or get their other opinions, or ultimately decide between not just, you know, product A or product B, or product A or keeping it in-house. Right? Do we even choose to outsource this? Do we choose to go ahead and invest outside when we could still do it in-house? So that is a decision that needs to be made. And then the timeline is always the biggest one, right? I always find people that will, when, you know, I use the example, right? Thank you very much for the proposal. We'll contact you when we're ready. That is like the number one reason. I'm like, you were not lead qualified, right? You did not know why that client needed to make that decision and when they need to make the decision by. Because when we start to talk to them about the sale after the sell, right? Why, like when you and I are done this transaction and we're no longer a part of that, how are they going to use that transaction to grow their business? What does that mean to them? And then we backtrack it until they get to a point where they have to make that decision today or within 2 weeks of today. That's sales
magic. Is that
magic.
Part of that first bit, or is that on the second date? So the first date is obviously all focusing around BANT, asking the right questions, are we the right fit? And then how does that meeting usually close out? Like where's it kind of left off? Now we know, okay, yeah, you are a good fit.
So, I mean, you'll stay in lead qualification until you're lead qualified, right? I mean, here's the thing is that, you know, until you are clear on the BANT portion, I mean, that most times that will be one meeting, or it might even be half a meeting. There might be situations where it might be two or three meetings, right? But you cannot move, you cannot help, you know, because in the next step after step five, which is lead qualification, step number six or seven, depending on how we look at this, which will be value creation. How do you even create value for somebody if you don't even know where you want to take them, right? Yes. And so until you understand where they want to be and, you know, and how this will impact their business, we can't help create more value by them investing in us. So however long that takes, whether that is, you know, half a meeting, a single 20-minute phone call, or, you know, a full meeting or two meetings, I mean, you're in that stage until you move forward. The bottom line is that you cannot propose, right? You cannot deliver a proposal to somebody if you don't know that, you know, what their timeline is on when they even want to make a decision or how much they're willing to invest.
So then if we transition, so let's say we have qualified them and then we move into this, the next step around the value identification,
value creation
for them. Tell us a little bit about how this step works.
Yeah. So in the value creation, this is where we typically ask a lot of questions, right? And this is, I mean, this is all like, and this is the robustness of sales. It's about asking as many questions as you possibly can. And the reason why I said it kind of overlaps between six and seven is because in our specific process, we include the impact of emotional intelligence in the conversation. And emotional intelligence should ideally flow throughout the entire sales cycle. But we kind of fit it between the lead qualification and the value creation, because at this point, if we haven't touched on it, we really need to touch on it, which will be, you know, and how does that make you feel, right? And how would, you know, when you get there, how would that make you feel? But in the value creation phase, this is about asking those open-ended questions. Your who, what, where, when, how, and why. And when we find ourselves deviating towards a closed-ended question, right? Do you, could you, should you, are you, is this, you know, blah, blah, blah. Those are closed-ended questions. They paint us in a corner. And when we're painted in a corner, we have nowhere to go, right? Is this something you would find of value? Well, yes, okay, right? Are you the decision maker? Yeah, I guess so, right? Like, you know, is this within your budget? Yeah, sure, right? Like, what does that ultimately mean, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas when you ask them the open-ended questions, right? What do you find of value, right? Who else is going to be a part of this decision? How will you measure the impact on the success of this project? Now, all of a sudden, we're opening up the conversation, and we're becoming very vast, and we're becoming creative and collaborative with our client. And at the end of the day, our clients want to work with people that are going to work with us, not at us.
Yeah. So the purpose of that value creation step, or one of the key ones, is to have them involved in the process in identifying where that value is. Is that...
Well, I mean, I can't tell you what is valuable to you, right?
Yes.
And I can't tell you how something specific is going to impact you, right? I mean, inside of our sales process, I mean, we play a fun game where we all fall into radioactive goo, right? You all fell into radioactive goo, right? You're now a superhero. What's your superpower? Now, here's the reality is that I've given you, you know, some type of output, right? Or given you the input. And whatever you come out of that, everybody is completely individual, unique, and different, right? We all develop some type of different superpower, even though we all fell in the same radioactive goo. And in our client's case, right, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm engineering services or an accountant or, you know, a business consultant. I mean, I'm probably going to give you some type of same input. But yeah, the way it impacts your business and how many clients you achieve, how much you've increased your profitability, how much more revenue you've gained out of that is going to be completely individual and unique, which, I mean, later on, it will ultimately impact how we communicate the return on investment to our client. It is not up to us to tell our client what their return on investment is with us. It is up to us to ask them the questions and find out when they invest with us, how will this impact their business? Because yeah, at the end of the day, we all have our all individual dreams, goals, and ambitions, and we will take what we want and achieve more with where we want to take it.
Yeah. So what then, how do we move to the next stage? So after that sort of value creation.
Yeah. So now we got into the value creation, right? We ultimately, I mean, you know, and one of the biggest things with the value creation phase is to, we use the analogy of the transportation versus destination, right? When you get on a plane with somebody, right? Let's say, you know, whether you're flying Qantas or if you're listening to this in the States, right? You're Delta or wherever else. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the plane, the airline is going to go ahead and try to sell you a vacation, right? And they're like, get on this plane and everything, and they focus you not necessarily on, you know, whether it is Australia in the middle of December when it's beautiful, maybe in December because it's too hot, but you know, they're not going to focus you on that, right? They're going to focus you on, like, you know, Chicago in the middle of February, right, where it's like brutally cold and it's icy, and like they love to remind you, like, it's August now, like, don't forget it's going to be, you know, winter anytime soon. And then they take you to this beautiful destination, and they imagine, make you imagine the beach, right? And they show you, like, you know, Cancun or the Caribbean or something. You're in this beautiful place. Now the idea behind this is not that Qantas and Delta, or, you know, if you're listening to this thing in Canada, Air Canada, we're focusing on what you ultimately buy, which is a seat on a plane. Right. And if the entire commercial was based on, listen, we're going to get you on this size of seat, it's going to be this wonderful, like, you know, gray leather that has been pre-warmed up by the guy that was sitting there for the last 6 hours farting up a storm, right? And we're going to, like, cattle call you through here, right? Nobody would buy that process. We buy what we ultimately get because of that process, right? We will endure a lot of pain, right? Because airline travel sucks for the most part, right? And, you know, changing any type of process in our company is going to suck for the most part. But we will invest in that because we get to the beach. Now, the reality is that Qantas doesn't really care what you do the moment you get off that plane. But they will focus your entire attention on that beach, right? And they're like, this is where we will help to get you beyond that. So that's part of that value creation stage. And when we've articulated the difference between the transportation versus the destination, which we should never talk about the transportation, right? This is what we do. We help save costs, save money, energy, blah, 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 because of the process we're involved, but rather what does the client do after that sale? Then we can move into the proposal stage, which is stage number 8.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and everything throughout the entire sales cycle is really driven towards the proposal. And I love getting to this point in the sales process with people, because this is where, like, everything starts to click. And they're like, oh, I know why I was asking those questions. I know why I'm, like, you know, like, doesn't feel arbitrary. I'm actually filling in a document that I'm going to present to my client that they're going to be ready. Now, the key with the proposal, very similar to romantic relationships, is we do not propose to anybody unless we feel like a certain level of certainty that they're going to say yes, right? We want to feel like at least 80% certain that the person is going to say yes, because if we feel like it's going to be a flip of a coin, why would we spend all this time and energy, like, buying the ring and proposing in front of, you know, the Jumbotron at a giant stadium, only to have the woman be like shaking her head, like, I don't even know the guy, like, this is date number 3, right? You know, like, you're going to crash and burn. So you want to go in with a certain level of certainty that you are going to get the deal. Now, the quickest way of doing that is before you leave your last meeting in value creation, and before entering your first meeting in the proposal stage, is to set up this for success. Listen, in our next meeting, I'm going to give you everything you need to make a decision. Okay. Now, the wording in that is so clear, because I'm prefacing that they're like, you should be ready to make a decision at this point. And if you tell me that you're not ready to make a decision, stay in value creation. don't move on. Do not pass go. Do not collect your $200 because you're not there yet. At this point in time, the client will tell you what more they need to find out. Well, we have to have a demo, or, you know, I realize that, you know, we have to get Karen involved. And you're like, okay, great. This is a great time to know. Not when I'm like sitting there with a contract and like sweating like all over the place because I'm like, I'd already promised my sales manager that this deal was going to happen. So the proposal, at the proposal stage, I mean, this is really where we now are outlining the entire journey that we have gone on. And the proposal is a story, and the proposal is a selling document, and it is not to be confused with a contract or a scope of work or a letter of intention or anything else like that. Those are all different documents. The proposal is a proposal. The proposal, number one, should be delivered in person, hands down. Right? If you are selling a premium service at a premium price, you deliver this proposal in person. And if you're not in a geography where you can be face to face with a person, you have Zoom, you have Skype, you have FaceTime, right? But there is absolutely zero excuses why you should just email somebody the proposal. Mm-hmm. Because hands down, I think there'd be a lot less married people if every single person accepted, like, hey, baby, want to get hitched? Send, right? You know, we need to have that proposal delivered to us in person. And the nice thing is, if you're not in the same geography where you can deliver the proposal in person, using a method like Zoom or Skype, you can actually, number one, you do a screen share, right? So you're in control of the conversation. Number two, you record it. So if there's somebody that is needing to see the information from the proposal, on top of actually sending them the PDF document after the call, you can also send them a link to the recording so that somebody can actually go through and be like, oh, what did she actually say in, you know, the timeline or in the solution or anything else like that. You can actually drive yourself to that particular area as opposed to feeling like you're playing the telephone game and like, oh, well, I think this is what she meant, but I wasn't really sure, and I'm just going to communicate something. So the proposal, it's a story, it is a journey. We're covering the transportation, the reasons why we, this is where, how far we've come, this is where we will achieve in our life, and this is what our marriage will look like by being together.
And you touched on a few components there, and it's good. I think the framework is such that it could be applied to a lot of different situations and businesses. Are there, like, if we put some specific like makeup or structure to a proposal, have you got any sort of either?
I call it the 6-slide proposal, right? Like, yeah. That's it. Like your proposal should not be more than 6 slides. Like, simplicity is key. And so, I mean, the proposal starts off by, number one, outlining the client's goals. Outside of your product or service, right? Outside of them ever choosing to invest in anything, where does your client want to be in a year, 3 years, 5 years from now? Now, the reason why we want to articulate that is because, number one, we should somehow be like work into helping them achieve that goal, right? So it, going back to the idea of the transportation destination, the goal is ultimately to get to that beach, right? Mm. I want to get to that beach vacation. Okay, great. Number one, it's easy for the client to say yes, like, yes, I agree to that. Number two is that if you get that portion wrong, like, throw the rest of your proposal out the window. Because if you can't help a client like articulate where they want to be in a year or 3 years or 5 years from now, then like it doesn't even matter how great of a product or service it is. Like you don't know what your client, where your client wants to be. The second slide is the current state, right? So now we're going back to that transportation destination. We're going to, where am I currently? And what is the impact of not changing? And how will that make me feel? So this isn't just talking about being in Chicago. This is now talking about being Chicago in the middle of February and how it will make me feel terrible because I'm having to endure this bitter winter. If I don't leave Chicago in the middle of February, I have to endure like another 9 weeks of winter, right? Like this is like, I need to leave at this point. And then we get to the ideal state. So that's slide three. Ideal state is slide three. And the ideal state is ultimately, now that we've gotten on the plane, we're getting to the Cancun airport, right? We are getting to the airport. We're helping to get you closer to the beach. But as soon as we get you to the airport, we're out, right? Like, you know, this is, we can only get you so far. And this is where what you're ultimately going to be once our product and service is finished, right? Once we have finished our agreement, or once, you know, if you're in an ongoing relationship, this will be once it is working seamlessly, right? We're done the growing pains at this point in time. Which brings us then to slide number four, which is now we're talking about the solution. right? And the solution is done very high level. This is like, you know, so now we know where we need to go, right? The solution becomes like that transportation, right? How are we going to impact that business? Right? So now you're going to get on a plane, right? And the plane's going to fly for 6 hours and everything, right? Very high level. Now you can talk about one, two or three solutions, never more than three. And there is a lot of psychology behind how many solutions you choose to provide. But we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into the persuasion side of it. But you can provide different types of solutions, but keep it very high level. And the reason why we also do it on PowerPoint is because you are forced to keep it concise. Mm-hmm. If the client wants more detail, that's what the contract or scope of work or other documentation is available for. In a PowerPoint document or Google Slides or however you want to do it, you're forced to keep it to like, you know, 3-5 bullet points. And then we go into the timeline. So now this is where we pull up that Gantt portion, right? Because it's not just when do we want to be finished, but when we're finished, how will the client use that business transaction, right? When we have given them a brand new accounting platform, right? Now they're going to be able to get their taxes done way faster than they thought before. Now that they have this, project management thing, right? They're going to be able to apply for bigger proposals for their ultimate clients. And we're going to work ourselves backwards, right? So that's the date that the client said absolutely need to be done. Here's what they're going to be able to do because of that date. And then backwards to that means that they ultimately have to make a decision within today or 2 weeks from today, which then brings us to the price, right? So slide number, this will be slide number six, right? The price or investment slash the return on investment, because when we present price, right, unlike when I was taught in Xerox, right, we were always taught to do price, and you always had to do your proposal and you do it with a sheet of paper and you hide the price, right? And it's just like you're some type of magician. And then when you go ahead and you explain all the return on investment, you unveil the price as if it was magic, and the client would be like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. I never thought it was going to be that low. But that never happened. Right? Everybody always gets sticker shock, even when we fully anticipate what the price will be with our client. And so I like to just present the elephant in the room. But if you're going to throw them the anchor, that is price, right? It's heavy. Price is heavy and it anchors and it weighs us down. Help to lift them up with all of the ands. And for this investment, and all of those little ands is up to the client on why they told you why they needed to invest. And because when we have a better system, we're going to be able to take on more capacity for more clients. And when we have that, we're going to be able to onboard our employees faster and we're going to remind them of all those ands. And then ultimately you close it off. I don't include the last slide, but it's the next steps, right? So we're just reminding them, you're going to get all this, but now we have to now take action.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. So I think that kind of gets the proposal bit. And I suppose that's where that bridge is to that next step, because the proposal is just delivering. Do you want some form of agreement at that point? Or is
ideally. Yeah, I mean, if we can, that's great, right? But I mean, here's the reality is that if you're positioned at a premium price, right, most of the time your client isn't ready at that moment to say yes. Yeah. Right? They're just like, okay, like this is great, right? So, I mean, but we don't want to just like, you know, they're going to, and where we actually want to get them to is, so we get into the negotiation, and oftentimes the proposal and the negotiation will be the same day or the same meeting, but it may not be.
Delineate, right? Negotiation as a separate step.
Yes. Yeah. And the reason why is because what we have done with our client is this is our opening offer. Right? This is where we're going to start the conversation. And where we want to leave the client is where we have at minimum agreed to the highest level, right? Do you agree that this relationship is worth continuing on? Do you agree that what we have talked about so far is worth us continuing to pursue, right? If your client is in a position where they're ready to take action today, fantastic. Like don't stop that, right? I mean, and always have your proposal ready with your contract, right? Have the contract available so that you can sign it like right then and there. But I mean, if the person's not ready, which in most cases when you're positioned at a premium, right, you are the mid to high level price, they need a moment because they're like, whoa, that's like, you know, that's still a lot of money I was, you know, expecting. Or ideally, we're actually going to plant seeds throughout the sales process on where to expect our pricing structure. But even when they see it now on paper, now it's a reality. oh, okay, well, I still need to, you know, get approval and da-da-da-da. Great, right? Can we agree that this is something that we're going to continue to pursue? Can we agree that the conversations that we've had so far that, you know, we could definitely be the ones that are going to help you grow your business? Yeah, we can agree on that. Okay, great. So we've agreed to the highest level, which brings us then to the negotiation. And the negotiation, the biggest thing I like to say is, as much as possible, never negotiate on price, right? The price is, I mean, it's sacred, right? And, you know, your price is what your price. Hold it with pride, right? You can only compete on three different things. You can compete on your quality, your service, your price, right? It's the quality, service, price triangle. And, you know, if you choose to negotiate on price, that means you have to give something else up. Are you giving up your quality or are you giving your service? Because you can't have all three. So I would much rather negotiate on either the quality, right? What are they ultimately getting? Maybe that's less of a product. Maybe we add a little bit more to help bridge up the price. Maybe it's service. Maybe there's support. Maybe there's additional impact that we can create on their business, right? We can provide them with more, 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 ultimately keeping that price level the same. Or there's other things that we can negotiate on, such as payment terms or plans, or you know, how do we incorporate with our clients, and how do you ultimately get to a point where you're rotating your sales cycle through referrals and testimonials? And now the nice thing is, when you have your Hot 100 list, you can actually be more specific and, like, you know, listen, I would love to have an introduction to Greg at ABC Company because I know I saw on your LinkedIn that you guys work together. Yeah, I could do that. Okay, that's valuable to me, right? Okay, I'm willing to negotiate.
Yeah. I think that definitely the replacement, if there is going to be a change anywhere, then there needs to be the equal and opposite change. You don't want to just take away, because then that kind of undermines, well, how did you even decide your price in the first place?
Yeah, there's a give and get relationship, right? And, you know, and oftentimes people will often negotiate on price. Price becomes really one of two things, right? It's either that they don't understand the value, or they just, it's not the price, it's the cash flow, right? Or you'll have certain, there are certain roles or certain people that will just always negotiate. Well, I'm just going to ask if I can get cheaper, right? Okay, well, yeah. Fine. You know, but if you say yes too easy, right? I mean, what are you kind of leaving the other person like, oh, I should have asked for more. I had no idea I had so much wiggle room, right? And, you know, and so just leave price as it is and play with some of the other levers first. And then if you absolutely have to, then play with price. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, because you've entered into the proposal stage, 80% certain that you're going to get the deal, right? I mean, you know, at this point in time, we're just hashing things out. And this is a collaborative process, right? This is an adversarial process. This isn't, well, you know, one person wins and the other person loses. It's how do we create more in this relationship altogether? And if they get to the proposal stage, I mean, they've already chosen you, right? So don't go ahead and drop your pants and see, like, you know, okay, like, here it is, right? I mean, they've already chosen that you're the person that they want to be in a relationship with. So just go ahead and figure out what do the details have to look like for us to agree to move forward on this?
Yeah. And then, so at that point, the takeaway to then move through to the next step is reaching that agreement and then going, great, we got a deal now.
Well, I mean, you negotiated, and then I guess the final step is now, you know, just like continuing to follow up with them and then, you know, giving yourself those cross-selling and upselling opportunities later on, because the relationship doesn't end because you've signed a piece of paper. Right? I mean, the marriage doesn't end because you said I do at the altar, right? There's this whole marriage process as well. And this is where a lot of, like, marriages will fail, is because everyone was so excited to get to the wedding. And then they're like, oh, okay, well, now that we're married, like, you know, what do we do? But I mean, like, the reason why you got to that proposal stage is because you want to be married to the person. So continue to serve them, continue to support them, give them opportunities. So, I mean, if somebody invests a dollar with you, they're more likely to invest another dollar with you. So as you continue to expand your level of services, you go back to them and approach them with new opportunities, new prospects. Ask them for the referrals. Like the reality is 89% of clients will be willing to refer, and yet only 23% do. And it's because we never ask. And it's not about asking, do you know of anybody? But it's like, who do you know? Who do you know in that company? Or who do you know in, you know, other engineering companies that would also benefit from the service? Ask for testimonials, video testimonials, right? All of that stuff provides value, but this is all part of the relationship. You can turn a great sales process sour very quickly by leaving someone hanging at the end after they've said, you know what, I believe in this relationship, I trust this. And then you're just like, okay, I got my money, I'm out.
Yeah. I think it's good, the framework that we've gone through, because you kind of have each of the key stages. It's broad enough that it can be tailored to everybody's individual situation and then business. And then I think the key is to go through these step by steps and then decide what your playbook looks like for each of the different steps. So for example, that last step, thinking, okay, well, we have a process for following up, we have a process for upselling, potentially capturing, you know, might even happen before that, capturing a case study or a testimonial, asking for a referral. So I suppose it's almost like the key steps we've gone through are the main pillars, and you want to make sure underneath each one of those you have your specific steps. Is that kind of how you approach it when you work with companies?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, and it's not just, you know, choosing a process that, like, I mean, like that's the outline process, right? And yes. I mean, it's a guideline, it's not the rule book, right? And the reason why we assign like open-ended homework assignments is because it becomes every single rep's individualized playbook. Because if I give David all the questions he needs to ask, he's just going to run through the questions like he's a robot, right? Yes, okay, yes. Well, you know, who else is a decision maker? No, language matters, right? And we choose language specifically because it has some type of meaning to us. We feel more comfortable asking a question in a certain way. And it can be everything from the way tone and inflections all the way through, you know, how we ultimately, you know, convey it all the way through. So use it as the framework, as the skeleton, if you will, right? And then how the skin and the muscles and everything else goes on, I mean, that's entirely up to you. Everyone's skeleton is the exact same, right? How everyone looks on the outside is completely individual and unique.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So with the recap, do you want to run us through those steps, high level, one last time?
Yeah. So we go through a 10-week process, and so every week we cover a different process, different step within the process. In our sales cycle buyer's journey, you're going to see 6 of them, because we cover, you know, a whole bunch in 3 portions. So you have your goal setting, your sales funnel, and planning. Number 2, you have your buyer persona and prospecting, right? What are some of the ways that your ideal buyer wants to be approached with? How can you find them? Number 3 is value proposition and elevator pitch, right? What are the statements that you're going to give that's going to start getting that conversation going? Number 4 is calling for meetings and introductory emails. We don't call it calling because you've hand-selected these people. So the intention is to call them for that meeting. How do we get that meeting? Number 5, lead qualification. Number 6, we go through emotional intelligence and how to use that appropriately in a business-to-business setting. Number 7 is value creation. 8, proposals. 9, pricing persuasions and negotiations. And 10, cross-selling follow-up.
Perfect. I know if people want to find out more, because you've gone, obviously this is very high level, to go into each of these in more detail, and you've got the training program, and you've obviously got the book coming out. Where's the best people to go to find out more about your process?
Yeah. So they can so my website is kimorleski.com. If you go /apply to KO Sales U with dashes in between, you can find out all about our KO Sales U program. And Sell More Faster, it will be officially out on July 31st. And you can find that on any online book retailer, Amazon, and wherever you like to buy books, you can go and check that out. And that goes through even deeper into some of these sales process. Plus with a lot, if you like my stories, I got lots of stories in the book.
That's good. The stories kind of tie it all together and make it, you know, more interesting than just step 1, do this, step 2, do that. So
yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's more meaningful when you see how it related to somebody, right? Or, right. You know, like you're like, oh, okay, I get it. And I mean, we've been doing this for, years now, right? We have, you know, literally hundreds, maybe thousands of clients. I'm not even too sure now. And so I have a lot of stories. And so it was a fantastic journey to write the book and be able to remember all of the conversations I had with people and include their experience throughout the journey that you'll read in the book, Sell More Faster.
Perfect. And I'll include a link underneath the session anyway to get back over to the website. And once they have a look around, they'll spot the book. So Kim, we'll wrap up there. A big thank you for your time and very generous with the knowledge. Much enjoyed having you on the summit.
Oh, thank you so much. I love being on here. And absolutely, I believe that, you know, education is not the same as application. So whatever you guys learn from this, like, go and do something with it. Even if it's simply just to send me an email and tell me how much you enjoyed it.
Perfect. Thanks again, Kim.